Travers Cosgrove, Reel 7. So this was, you were just at where exactly?
Well, we were to go over the Meuse, a few miles through a little town, and see what had happened to the bridge over this tributary. The names don't come readily, but I have written stories about this. Well, we got there, and it was a high bridge, up an embankment, a high bridge, but there were three spans to the bridge, two piers in the middle of the river, and they'd all been blown. All the spans had been blown, the piers seemed to be okay. So I have what we call the cover group, Lance Corporal and a sapper were trained to do this, and we had an inflatable dinghy, and we got these two over. Sergeant Moore was my recce sergeant, and he got them over to the other side and positioned them at what something that might have been a toll house. And he came back, and he and I would then have to go out and upstream of the bridge and measure the spans on our. It wasn't a tape that we had, but we had a wire that was clearly marked, so that you could tags and things that you knew just where you were.
So you were getting in the inflatable boat. And
getting the reconnaissance boat, yes. Yes, yes.
You were doing this at night?
Oh, yes. It was all in darkness. And then suddenly there was shouting on the other side. And we saw our chaps rushing across. And shots were exchanged with somebody or other. And we think, we never knew, we think it was an American patrol. Anyway, our chaps were killed.
How many?
Two. But it still left the reconnaissance to be done. So Wally Moore paddled me out, and we managed to do it. We managed to get that done without anything further. Whoever this patrol was didn't bother us again.
That must have been nerve-wracking.
It was. And and we came to take the boat out of the river. It was frozen solid with ice. However, and we got it back to the... Well, you couldn't fold it up, we loaded it on top. So, rather sadly, we went back to... It's one of the resorts on the Meuse, as it's called. There, where regional headquarters had rebased itself, and I went into the RE headquarters to make my report and tell them all. But the CEO said, "Well, I'm very sorry, but you can't go and ask the enemy for your dead, so." You know, give me your report. I just want the standard form. Well, he got it, and that was that. We went back, and our platoon had moved a bit while we'd been doing all this in life. We eventually found them in some schoolmaster's house.
was the attitude of the civilian population to you there?
Well, we went back, we had an opportunity to go back before we left the area altogether, and yes, it was, and we went to see the priest. He said, I want to show you where we've buried these people. He would like me to tell them they were Catholics. I couldn't. But he says, we haven't, this is only for Catholics, this ground is only for Catholics, but they're rather special. So that's where they were buried. I don't know where they are now, but that's where they were buried.
Was that usual for the civilian population to?
No. Normally it would be a military matter.
But he wanted
to. He wanted to do it, yes.
Were you there at the burial?
No, I did go with him afterwards. They had been buried there. We were then advancing into the Ardennes. I don't know whether we built on that bridge side or not, but we were advancing into the. I didn't go over that site. It was went further south and into the Ardennes.
So and what was that like? The weather was atrocious.
Well, it became atrocious. So it was snow, and more snow.
What were the engineering problems for you there?
One or two bridges. Mm-hmm. That was something you were on top of. There was nothing there except that as we were leaving it, an airborne division engineers came to take over from us. So we hadn't realised then that our airborne division had been brought in to help. We knew we had a lot of people involved, but I didn't know about this airborne vision being grounded and given that task. But they came to take over from us. And oddly, it was a platoon of a fellow who was being killed in Normandy, but a fellow that I was at school with. So you know, it was a little bond. What was it like? It was a very different sort of war to others we've been fighting. Forest, large amount of forest. The enemy could hide there if they wanted to. They didn't. It was a hard war and a very chancy war. I made a patrol and didn't explore further. Two or three pine trees fell across the path. But the next person went along and discovered that there were booby traps and S mines. But I'd made a detour and got through safely. It was a funny sort of war, very funny sort of war. When we were eventually evacuated, we were all utterly exhausted, absolutely completely exhausted. I wrote some very funny letters back to UK after that.
Because mud was a problem, wasn't it, or frozen ground,
mud if you were lucky, in a sense.
So what were you doing? Engineering
job. Forest tracks, opening forest tracks, rebuilding bridges, getting the ammunition and food up to the. They had weasels, these little very light Bren gun carrier type. They weren't armoured at all, but. They they could get across wet, damp, soft ground.
And you were with the ox and bucks?
Yes, I was. I was with 7-1 Brigade, which also had the HLI and the RO. We weren't so much in support of the Oxford. I did various things to the Oxford and Bucks, but you never knew quite whom you were supporting.
So eventually you got through the RTAN.
Well, eventually we were called back because we were really squeezed out by forces, American forces, coming from the north and the south, and they didn't really need us.
Did you have much contact with the Americans?
No, none at all. Except when we came out, we found a chateau, you know, where we thought, this'll do us for a rest. And we came in there, and then we discovered that the Americans were there. Now, they'd built themselves, not in the chateau, but outside it. They'd built an office block below ground level, and a bit walled up above it and roofed it over. So it was safe from all but a, you know, vertical. And we found they'd established it was just on the other side of the Meuse from where the fun was, but we said, can we come and camp here for a bit, and we were assault engineers or something of this sort, that we had to have the right word for the American. Yes, of course you can. You can have anywhere. So we did. We occupied the chateau and the grounds, and we had something like a week's rest before we went north into Holland again.
Do you remember the name of the chateau?
No, I have
an empty chateau.
The chateau was empty, but these Americans had made this office block. They must have had a rude shock when the defences started. So back we went to Holland. We went to a place called Zon. We'd been through Zon, up and down the main road there, and we were there for perhaps a month, 3 weeks. My demob leave, not demob leave, my what do we call it, the leave we had over there. I was due for a leave in February, so it seemed fairly evident that we weren't going to have any call till February. Our job was to be trained for the assault through the Reichswald Forest into Germany.
So you went off on leave.
So I went off on leave, and they went into the Reichswald. I think I did very well, because it was a miserable place, and just knee deep in mud and no road in it anywhere. You had to build your road out of wooden tree trunks.
So, how did you get on leave? You went by train, did you?
From Burg Leopold, took the train to Ostend, I suppose, and Ostend to Tilbury. My home was in High Wycombe, so that was easy enough.
Yeah. How long did you get?
I forget. Well, it was a good week anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When you came back, where were
when
they?
When I came back, they'd got to Goch, just outside Goch, on the railway line that ran north-south there, and they were attacking Goch. And the Germans ruled the skies. They'd got their jet fighters, and there was nobody wanting to know about them. They rule the skies over Gough.
So what did your platoon do then?
Well, we built the bridge over the river into Gough.
What sort of a bridge was that?
It was a bailey bridge. It's about 60 foot span, I would think, something like that. And no sooner over the bridge than there was a fine arch which you couldn't get through. I forget exactly what we did. We don't think we altogether blew it down, but we had to chisel it to tack it with a hammer, a Kanga hammer type equipment to enlarge it.
Oh, right. This is quite an old arch.
Oh, yeah, hundreds of years old.
Okay.
But not wide enough.
What did you see of the Battle of Gough?
By the time we'd finished building our bridge, the battle was over. But we were very much concerned with the fighting southwards towards Wees, Cavalier, and Geldon, which was very heavy fighting. Lots of mines and booby traps. The most notable thing I was involved with was the Skid Bailey Bridge over the anti-tank ditch north of Wees. This was built 4 or 5 miles north up the road and built onto wooden skids, wearing strips, all right? 8 inches deep, old sleepers or something of this sort. And if you put these on the bottom of the bridge, and you tugged hard enough with a tank, it would follow the tank, all right? And you put a little bit of a nose with a cant on it to get. Right, get it up in the front, and at the back you'd have a couple of loose paddles, and you put a bundle of wooden, you would understand, a fascine, a whole collection of big, good-sized half-inch twigs.
Oh, yeah.
Enough, a chest-paling bundle, you've seen that. Imagine that 8 feet wide, and 7 feet high. These great bundles of fascine wood could be untied, and then you get a ramp which a tank could negotiate.
Right.
Enough.
Use those in which cases?
Having launched the bridge. Release these fascines and the tank could climb up onto the bridge and get down without breaking its legs.
Yeah? Yes.
All right? Already,
yeah.
So that's... you'll find a picture of one on the back of that...
Oh, I see, yes.
So that was how we got across the anti-tank ditch at Wees.
I mean, did you have sort of constant liaison with those you were supporting? I mean, you were being constant liaison with them all day, as it were. Or did you sort of keep separate and wait till called on?
Usually the engineer part of the operation was a specific part. Either you had to get them over the river, or you've got to build the bridge so that they could get over the river. Go back to the approach to Sir Toganbosch, if you were going 8 miles through unknown territory, they might come on mines or an obstacle at any point, and they would come back and call for us. So constant availability, you had to be where they knew where you were,
right.
Or you had to finish your job before they could do theirs. Mm. Or perhaps they would be doing an assault craft crossing and while you were building your bridge.
Yeah.
So it would rather depend on the nature of the obstacle and how much was known about it. There was a case, I'll come to it after in a moment or two, which perhaps it gives it in context. So where are we now? We've got to Gough, and we're going down through Gough, Wies, Cavalier, or no, just the southern end of Wies. I looked out, and there was a previous commanding officer of our company by the roadside, and he was commanding a company of the 51st Highland Division. Sparrow. But he made me a lot of fascines. It made me a lot of things, sent them forward, which I needed very urgently at the next obstacle. So I was glad I'd seen him. I didn't have to go and cut them. The next obstacle was the one where I made my biggest balls up of the lot. The road was high on an embankment, and Julie had blown a hole in the top of it, and there'd been a lot of rain, and it was filled with water. When we got there and started clearing mines on both sides, and one mine clearing party was obviously going to get there and do it first, so I said, right, we will work, we will, when you've had a crater on the top of an embankment, you've got to break out the side of the embankment so that the water can drain down. Now, in both cases, the crater was perched way up in the air compared to the ground below. I said, well, it doesn't matter, the first one that finishes, we'll get the days those who are working on that side. Then bless me, Devon, I'd just done that when the CRE of this Welsh, of the Scottish Div came along and said, that's the wrong side, that side's lower. So I let him have his way, and the thing was, it was never satisfactory. It was always a mess. I didn't know how to tell him to go to hell. But that didn't go very well.
Did you get any blame for it all?
No.
Things you'd like to have
done better. Yes. Yeah. We did succeed in getting enough buoyancy, would be almost the word, on the road, filled enough in to the hole in the top of the road to get the assault traffic over. But it was spongy for every day, so they had to build a diversion on one side and take all the traffic that way and then dig out the whole embankment and refill it, which took a couple of days, I believe. But the assault traffic got through, which is really all that matters. So that brought us to Cavalier. Cavalier, one of our chaps, the fellow had been very good on the water supply. I told you about it. He said, there's something odd about this outhouse. There were his section was built in an outhouse. something odd about it. There's an empty, there's a space here, but no way into it. Sure enough, some fellow had built himself a cabin there in his backyard. And if you went, looked in over the top, you found it was very comfortable. And so there was a military administration. The town major was the man who you went to, and he came along and traced this fellow. I don't know anything what happened after that, but Sapper Norman discover this. They had a name for these people that were to go on fighting after they'd been overrun. Mm. So we found that, and then we went. We turned eastwards to Geldern. And Geldern was an old city with a moat. Probably had walls, but that didn't really matter. And we had to went right the way around. They're probably double moat in place. And we had to get through this. And I haven't said before that all this way, through the Reichswald Forest, it had rained all the time. And tanks could barely go onto open ground. They really had to be very lucky to get across open ground. And mine-clearing flail tanks couldn't. They were beat away, they just buried themselves. So the tanks were road-bound or track-bound in this from the Reichswald right up to the Rhine.
Was there anything you could do if a tank had got stuck?
You get a bigger tank to pull it out. You have to get out the cable. No. Nothing you could do.
No.
Right, now, Geldern. Several things of interest happened in Geldern. First of all, it was the place where the public thought we had met up with the Americans. We were going this way and the Americans were coming up from the south. So the news cameras came along and they pictured our cook, Geordie Clyburn, meeting an American outrider or something or other. So he was in the news there. But that was a little contrived. But it was also interesting because We got over this first obstacle readily enough. Infantry got over and into the town and cleared the town. But now here we were left with a wide plate of demolished causeway, a series of arches over this moat. We filled some, and behind us was a builder's yard. But the builder's yard was full of materials which would be very, very useful, and I didn't want to just bulldoze that into the hole. So we pulled the builder's house down instead, and pushed that into the hole. That was about the first thing, and that wasn't enough. So we pulled down houses on the other bank with an armored dozer. We just put a big bar across the window and pull the window out, and that would bring the house down. And then the brigadier of the 4th Independent Armoured Brigade, who were actually leading our advance, came along and said, I want my bridge laying tank across here to lay a bridge the other side so I can get on. I said, yes, sir, but no. It won't go. It will get stuck here. It can't get out there.